forgive yourself. There's always hope. And I think maybe the third one that I would want to say is always find an accountability person, somebody to keep you accountable. Whether you want it to be a professional or a friend that's going to give it to you straight, where if you are wanting to go on a vacation, your friend is saying, hold up now. Didn't you tell me that you want to go back to school and you're saving money for that degree? Okay, why are you trying to go on a trip to Paris now? Everybody else in your family is going, but is it a good time for you? Paris will always be there. You know, so, you know, somebody's going to hold your feet to the fire and really hold you accountable. You probably don't want your personal finance person to be that hold to your feet to the fire person, because, you know, we don't want to come on heavy on you, but you want to find that person who's going to tell you the truth about your finances and the choices that you're making. So those are three things that I think I would say. And I want to add a fourth one is mindset, you know, because if I could have stayed there and said, man, I worked so hard, I've been teaching people and this happened, and okay, stay there, wallow for a little bit. But now let's fix the future. Let's think, change our mindset. How can we now take this and make a stepping stone of it to rebuild your future? Hi, friends. Welcome to the Dr. Seb Talks Money podcast, where we explore the basics of personal finance, the psychology behind financial decisions, life and business strategies, family dynamics related to money, and much more. Here you can discover actionable strategies to boost your confidence and improve your financial well-being through the inspiring success and recovery stories shared by Dr. Seb and her guests. Hey friends, in this podcast, I am the interviewee. I am being interviewed by John Emery of Life's Checkmark podcast. In it, I share with him my journey from a financial setback to finding peace of mind. I also share with him some of the strategies I consider when I work with a coaching client. Sit back, listen to this insightful episode, and start your journey toward financial transformation.
Severine, I'm glad that you've made it onto this podcast. Just want to share a little bit of background. We connected through another podcast Facebook group, and I was delighted to have a phone conversation with you or Zoom, you know, and we were able to just talk about podcasting, life, and, you know, basically what you're doing. And we talked a little bit about your journey, but I asked you to come on and you could share your journey with others, and, you know, you can dive into like what you're doing and how you're helping others as well. So if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself and just share what you are doing, then we can go backtrack.
Okay. Well, what am I not doing is probably easier to start with.
Okay.
But I am happy to be here on the podcast. Hello to everyone. Again, my name is Severine Bryan, and I am an accredited financial counselor. And what I do is I serve women, busy women, I should say, who are needing to restart their financial journey. And I help them to understand or to set their financial goals and help them reach their goals, because the final attainment is really peace of mind. Not so much the money, but the peace of mind. So that's how I work with my clients. And I also have a podcast. I've been teaching personal finance for over 20 something years, and just recently started my actual business in the podcasting, in the personal finance world.
Okay. And so what got you interested in this, the financing, you know, from way back 20 years ago, you know, something had to trigger you to jump into this?
Well, I've always been a geek and I've always done really well with numbers. My calculus teacher told me that I needed to become an actuary. I had even no idea what that was. I eventually became an accountant, but I've always had an affinity for numbers and making, you know, $10 into $15 or $20. It's just been a natural knack. And I was going to this church and they asked me to become the stewardship director. And so I started researching and see what all of that entailed. And I realized, I love this thing. I love educating people about money. I love giving people the information for them to understand the power they have once they realize that they have control over their money. Even if they don't have a lot of it, but they have control over it. And there are things that they can do to get better control. No matter what's going on in the economy, there are things that you can do to go forward with your finances and make, you know, a dollar into five, maybe. These days, maybe it's a dollar into three, but they have the power to do that. So I've always had that. And then my dad put me on his account when I was 16 years old. And he said, "You are the most mature of my kids." I don't know what that means because I had a sister who taught me in high school. So I had sisters who were older than me. So that kind of put in my mind that I am capable and I have a gift to do it. So with my teacher, my dad, and everybody else thinking that I'm good with money, and then me starting to believe that, I delve a little bit deeper and found that, yes, this is my world.
Okay. So that got you rolling. So how did it really work with you in the church? You just saw the books coming in and the money, you know, is that what you were really watching?
I did some of that. I worked in the finance office, but basically what I did is I taught different things. So I would do newsletters. I would hold classes and I would teach about money. I used the Crown Financial package. And I would teach about money. I would teach about debt, how to budget. I'll teach about taxes, you know, all the things to watch for, how you can manage your money so that, or your paycheck, so that at the end of the year, you're not getting a big refund or you're not paying a big amount, you know, ways you can look at how to manage that. So you're not getting a big surprise. So I taught just about everything you can think of. I taught those subjects in the church. And then I also brought in guests. For those subjects that was like investments, I brought in guests to educate the congregation about things like that.
Gotcha. So just out of curiosity, most people really don't, I don't think most people take into the financial part unless they have a problem first. Did you experience a problem before you dove deep into finances and say, you know, I mean, this is how I can make things better for myself and then teach others?
Actually, I did. After all of the time teaching personal finance, you know, I was not intentional about my money. I was teaching personal finance. I wasn't in debt. I wasn't doing anything, you know, that would get me in trouble. I was just kind of coasting along in my financial life. And then I filed for divorce at 53. And because he took me to court to try to get more than what we were negotiating, I had to get a lawyer. So that caused me to pay, you know, have to put something on my credit card. So now I have debt for a credit card. And I also had to give him half of my 401k. I walked away from my house because he refused to leave the house. And so I walked away from the house and rented a house for me and my daughter. So that messed up my credit. So all of those things. So now I had to apply the things I've been teaching all this time. I had to become much more intentional in applying those things. And after several years, I rebounded. So that's why I know it works. And that's why I'm so passionate about doing the small things. Nothing big. You don't have to save $1 million. You can start with five, you know, because I know the little things work, the little steps work. So yes, that was my hiccup. And I look back and I'm thinking, I was upset at first because I worked really hard to make sure my credit scores are okay. Make sure that I have on-time payment, have all of these things. And then here it is, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And this happened, but it happened for a reason. It happened so I could have empathy for those who are going through things where 5 years ago, I probably would have said, how could you make this much money in this job and you're not saving anything? You know, that probably would have been my approach. But now I realize things happen. And so how can I use my story, use my education, Because not only did I do that at church and went through that and rebuilt my finances, but I also went back to school and got my accredited financial counselor certification because I wanted to have the experience that what I taught myself at the church, the experience that I have, plus the education, and be able to help people or to serve in that capacity and give people hope to that there is a way to rebuild your finances.
Yeah, there's always a way, right? So I'm just curious, how old was your I think you said your daughter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was in high school. Okay. I'd have to do some math to remember what age she was.
So my question would be, did she saw the transition of you going through the divorce and everything and having to change your mindset with money and everything and build up to where you are today, wherever that is, right? So as a mother, are you able to tell a difference between her then and now? And maybe she's got the habits that you're doing as well?
Well, my daughter is more of a type A. My daughter is more of a type Z if they existed. She's just very, very laid back. But one thing, I don't think she was, because I try to shield her from those things. I made sure she had what she needed. I was at the school. I was room mom all the way through. I was very involved and I still stayed involved until she graduated from high school. So in that aspect, she wasn't really negatively impacted. And I never said anything about her dad. I always made sure she went and saw him. So I made sure to try to take care of her emotionally and all the other things. But as she got older, maybe 16, 17, she started getting a job. So I talked to her and I said, you want to split your money? Well, I've always told her that, even as a child, very young, she'd get birthday money. And I always said, split it in three, give, save, and spend. Those are the three I would tell her, you know, take some, give, spend. So I've been hammering that for a while. And then she was probably, I want to say maybe 21 years old. And then she came to me and she said, Mom, you're always talking about high yield savings account. I would like to open one. And that made my heart happy. So I showed her how to open Call American Express at the time, because I had several, but I liked American Express. So I had her open an account there. So she's been saving. And when I did her taxes last year, she had gotten, I want to say $70-something in interest. So she had been doing pretty well in saving. So she's, you know, I mean, she's young. So every now and then Amazon, ding, 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 ding,
yeah, ring, sure,
ding, all those deliveries. And I'm like, what are you doing? Are you still saving? Yeah. So I told her, you know, have fun. But at the same time, you always want to look after your older self, because you never know what will happen. So she's kind of getting it. Mm-hmm. She's kind of getting it.
Yeah, it's tough. And I think that's what has to happen sometimes. Like, you could teach your kids as much as you can and want to, right? But they have to learn the lesson the hard way sometimes. What would you say would be probably a good age to start teaching kids?
Wow, as early as you can. There's so many ways you can teach them. You go to the grocery store and, you know, maybe they're 5, 6, and you say, okay, here is this rice. And here's this rice. And here's how you can compare. Even though this one is $3 and this one is $5, but do you see that sign? It says per ounce. That means this one, even though it's more expensive by the ounce, or for each bite you take, it's cheaper. You know, little things like that. So there are things we can do when they get birthday money. You can talk to them about, okay, so you want to save for, I don't know what kids say for these days, a video game, and grandma gave you $20. How much is a video game? And they may say, oh, it's $150. Okay, so let's see how we can start saving. How much more do you need? Just little conversations. It doesn't have to be, okay, it's time to talk about money. You know, it's just the everyday things that we do. How can we make those lessons into things that they can learn about money, so they're not fearing money? They're not thinking money is this thing I have to set aside a time and stress and sweat about it. It's part of life, and I can incorporate it into my everyday decision.
So I have two children, and I would consider one a saver, one a spender at the moment. So I mean, how can somebody, not just kids, but how can somebody like break the cycle from spending, I guess, would be the worst thing all the time, right? To become more of a saver.
Yeah, okay, so I'm an excessive saver, but that's not all good because there's what's we want balance, okay? And some of the things that I do, especially in my practice, is I do these quizzes. I do a thing called Money Habitudes, and I also do a test where you can determine what your money type is. What type are you? And then what are the things that you can do to bring balance to that, because some people are excessive savers, some are excessive spenders, and there are things that trigger that. There may be an experience where maybe for the spender, it's something that they were told they really wanted, and they said, "Oh, you can't have that. We don't have the money for it." So now when they have the money, they're like, "Okay, now I have my money. I'm going to do what I want to do because you told me before that you can't afford it, or we don't have money for that." So now they're going overboard. And there are times, even when you tell one person that, they may say, "Okay, we never had money, we couldn't buy the things. No, I'm going to hoard everything." So you never know how people will take their experiences, their money story, and how they will cause it to impact the way they behave. But you want to, first of all, those tests are really, really good to kind of identify, not to say you're bad or good, because money is neutral. It's not bad or good. It's a tool. So we just want to identify how you behave around money. What is your money behavior? What is your story? And then what are the things that we can put in place to help you bring back, come back to center? Like if you are someone who is an impulsive shopper, well, maybe you don't want to go to the grocery store. Maybe you want to buy online and have them deliver it, because that cuts back the temptation to do excessive shopping. Maybe you want to have an accountability partner where if you like shopping online, getting a dress or whatever, you say, "Hey, I'm getting ready to buy this dress." And then you can talk it out with your accountability partner. Just different things you're not changing your personality, but you're putting things in place to help you come back to center of whatever that, extra thing is that you are, whether you're extra saver or extra spender.
Yeah, you're trying to prepare yourself, right? I like the accountability part as what you said. Most people, I would think, with finances wouldn't be reaching out to people because they're ashamed of where they are because, they put themselves in that spot probably for the most part. So, I mean, for you, I guess, and for, people you've helped along the way, when do you feel like these people reach out to you? I mean, is it like at the darkest of the moments, or maybe they reach a peak where they're making more money or something like that, and they don't know what to do with it? I'm just curious, when these people start reaching out for some kind of financial help.
I mean, it runs the gamut. It could be somebody who just got a job and decided, "Okay, I want to start off right. So help me figure out how to spend my money. What are the best ways to," maybe even just got a job offer and they want to help to negotiate the job offer. So it runs the gamut of somebody who is now on their last rope and need to figure out some strategies versus and it could be somebody who just wants just some pointers. They already are doing some things, but they just want to make sure they're on the right path. So there are just no one set or one type of personality who comes to me. But what I would say to those who are listening, there is no reason to be ashamed of making financial mistakes. One of the reasons I share my story is because I want people to understand that even if you know what to do, it doesn't mean that you're going to always do the right thing, quote unquote. We all make mistakes. We all make financial mistakes. I don't care who you are. I don't care, from the president down to the person who cleaned the toilet. We all make financial mistakes. So there's no reason for us to be ashamed. I try to make my practice a non-judgment zone because he who is without sin cast the first stone. there's no reason to be ashamed. So own up to the fact that, you know what, I made this mistake, or I did this thing that now is derailing my finances. Catch it as quickly as you can so that you can correct it. And don't be concerned. Try not to be concerned. I'll say try not to be concerned, because we're so influenced by the things we see, our friends and all of that. Try not to be so concerned about what society says you should do. At 30, you're supposed to have the house and the you know, 2.5 kids and the picket fence and all of that. But personal finance is personal for a reason. Everybody's situation and story is going to be different. So if you're listening, please don't be ashamed. Find somebody you trust and talk to them and get the help you need. And because again, you'd be surprised how many people are in the same position that you think have it together. And don't be afraid, because you're not alone.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I liked how you said about society, like saying you should be here at this age or whatever. And that's so true. Like, everybody starts to think like, oh, wait, you have how much debt? I mean, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, at what age, you know, for what reason, it doesn't matter. But people think like that, you know. So with that being said, you know, you had a somewhat of a mindset shift when you went through a divorce. What do you do to help your clients come, you know, when they come to you, what do you do as like trying to help them with their mindset shift, like looking at a different, because it's different, like it's a totally different avenue than what they're used to. So, I mean, there's gotta be, I would imagine there's some kind of process you start with.
Yeah. I try to make sure, first of all, that they understand, you know, what their money story, what maybe the influences that are making you make a choice versus another. But at the same time, what is your goal? We want to dig deep into what it is that you want to achieve. What is your goal? Because a lot of people will say, oh, I just want to have a budget. But having a budget and not having the right mindset in terms of how you look at your money, a month or two later, you're gonna abandon that budget. So I try to make people understand, or try to work with people to let them understand your underlying reason. What is your reason for wanting to do this? Why do you want to fix your budget? Why do you want to fix your money? And that is not to go on vacation. It shouldn't be, because then when the vacation is over, what happens? It has to be something that's deeper. So we want to figure out what your why is, what's driving you. And then we want to figure out what are the strategies that we can put in place to ensure that you realize your why. Now we work on the what, and we work on the when and how to get you to your why. I mean, and there's no set process. They say everybody that comes in start here. It all depends on what your goals are and where you are in your planning process, and what it is that once we've identified your money story, so to speak, and the things that you might, the support that you might need to achieve your goal, then we'll work on that based on the goals that you've identified and how you behave around money, and you know, the guardrails that we can put in place for you to reach your goals. The way I handle my money is so different from my daughter's. I'm very anal. I'm always balancing my account. I'm always making sure I know where every money is to the penny. My daughter is a different story. So I could not approach her if I'm going to work with her, then I'm going to have to, I can't do the rigid rules. Like, you know, you budget, you got to track your money. I have to find another way that is interesting to her, that I can work with her to get her engaged. So it has to be based on the personality, based on, you know, what your socialization is to money, what are your goals, and what are the things that drive you, and, you know, all these things you have to consider. You're almost like a counselor, you know, a mental health counselor, because you really have to really, to be successful and to help your client succeed, you really have to dig deep to see, how can I help this client? And I'll just say this, if you think about lottery winners, you know, people say, oh, if I could just have more money. And lottery winners, they get millions of dollars. And in a few years, I think the stat says within 5 years, many of them are broke again. It's not the money, it's the mindset. is how I look at money. That's what changed. That's what needs to change. Because if you have a dollar, there are stories of people who are janitors and all of that, and they left so much money. Meanwhile, those of us who make six figures and seven figures, we die in debt. So it's not the money, it's really our mindset, how we look at that money. And that's what I want to start with my clients.
That was a good point there. I think they're, like you said, the six figure, seven figure people, you could say some of them still live in paycheck to paycheck because, you know, that's just the way they have their money going. So they're starving for more money. So they just keep on pumping out more and more time for the business. You know, you mentioned how you write down everything in the bank account. So first thing that came to mind was, like, you're like one of the Rockefellers, where I remember him always writing down everything in his notebook way back then, what, the late 1800s or something, if I'm right. So that, I thought that was kind of fun. But no, I mean, what you're doing is good. I'm not saying that was funny, but yeah. Just keeping track. Yeah. Just a short story there. But so, you know, how can somebody reach out to you and connect with you if they're interested in just getting to have a chat with you, learning more about what you do and your strategy for helping these people out?
Yeah, I do have a 15-minute free consultation on my website, and that is sevtalksmoney.com. That's S-E-V. talksmoney.com, and they can always book a 15-minute consultation and see, do I like her style or not, based on our first conversation, and then we can go from there.
I think after somebody listening to this, I think they would probably like your style, your attitude, and, you know, I mean, your personality. Doesn't sound like you're going to come on strong on anybody. With that being said, I mean, if somebody's like falling short, you kind of point it out to them, right? And say, like, well, you know, you got to work in this area.
Well, I feel that every client is their own, they're the architect of their own life. And my job is not to stand over them with a hammer, because if I do that and they're gone from me, they're no longer my client. Now that hammer is no longer there. What do? They go back to what they were doing. So my job is to give you options, discuss with you. Okay, so you want to go on vacation at the end of the year, because that's something you do as a girl trip, you know, boy trip, whatever. You go hunting, whatever. All right, so let's look at your finances. You say you want to buy a house in 6 months. So let's look at your numbers. If you were to go on this trip, what are the costs? So we break that down. Now, how would that impact you wanting to buy a house in 6 months? So we're going to go through strategies, and I'm not going to say this is wrong or right, because it's not my place. You have to live with your choices, but I'm going to give you the strategies, and I'm going to ask the questions so you can think and come up with your own answers. And sometimes you may choose to go on the trip, but then you have to remember there are always opportunity costs with every decision we make. So, you know, if my job is to do those kinds of things, is to give you options, show you different roads that you can take, and then it's up to you, based on the road you're going to take, then let's put a strategy in place for you to walk that road.
That's great. You said opportunity cost. I just struck a spark in my head, because I made a video about that years ago, and, you know, it's something you forget, you know, and it's true, because basically what it is you're walking away from something when you could have been making more money, or, you know, investing in something, you know, whatever it is, right? You're losing an opportunity. Even time is an opportunity. Yeah. You lose the time, you know, that's not just financial talk whatsoever. So I know you shared a lot about your journey and your financial story that you had, and, you know, how you're helping other clients, but what are the three key things you've learned and used along your journey?
Wow. One of the first things is always give yourself grace. Realize that you are only human and we all make mistakes. So give yourself grace. Forgive yourself. Even if the mess up is because you made stubborn choices, forgive yourself. Give yourself grace. I think the other thing that I learned is that there's always hope. There's always hope. When you start your journey, you might want to have a $500,000 when you're 62, but because of something that happened, now you only have 300,000 or 200,000 when you're 62. But even if you didn't meet the initial goal, you can still start where you can end up with a goal. So, you know, forgive yourself. There's always hope. And I think maybe the third one that I would want to say is always find an accountability person, somebody to give you accountability, to keep you accountable. Whether you want it to be a professional or a friend that's going to give it to you straight, where if you are wanting to go on a vacation, your friend is saying, come on, hold up now. Didn't you tell me that you want to go back to school and you're saving money for, you know, for that degree? Why are you trying to go on a trip to Paris now? I know everybody else in your family is going, but is it a good time for you? Paris will always be there. You know, so, you know, somebody who's going to hold your feet to the fire and really hold you accountable. You probably don't want your personal finance person to be that hold to your feet to the fire person, because, you know, we don't want to come on heavy on you, but you want to find that person who's going to tell you the truth about your finances and the choices that you're making. So those are three things that I think I would say, because I had someone who was holding me accountable. And once I realized that there was hope, then I started rebuilding, because now I'm in a much better place. My credit score was in the 500s. Now it's in the 800s. You know, if I had stayed there and just, and I want to add a fourth one, is mindset.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, because if I could have stayed there and said, man, I worked so hard. I've been teaching people and this happened. And, you know, yeah, okay, stay there, wallow for a little bit. But now let's fix the future. Let's think, change our mindset. How can we now take this and make a stepping stone of it to rebuild your future? So I would add mindset in there too, as one of the things that I would want people to consider.
That's great. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And they were all great, you know, points that you learned along your journey. So the one thing I want to share, I just want to talk real quick, and then so the accountability part, I've heard people like saying, you know, if I do go, say I go on this trip, I owe you $200 because I went against what I was trying to say, you know what I mean? So I don't know if that's something that people actually do, but I've heard people say stuff like that to do it. So, I mean, that could be something, or they give it to like,
yeah, or points. They do, or points. Yeah. You know, you have certain points. If you have certain things, if you do certain things, we're going to give you points. And at the end of the program or whatever, how many points you have, because each point is going to equate to, you know, whatever you set. And then you can get that reward for those points. So there are just different ways you can motivate people for them to do the right thing. But you don't want to do it too much, because, again, you don't want them to do it because of that. Because when it's gone, what are their choices? So you want to kind of reward, but be careful about balancing that, because you don't want to be, again, the hammer, because that's like a hammer. It's like, okay, if I save my money, I'm going to get this phone. So, okay, you've gotten the phone. So are you going to still save? You know,
yeah.
So put things in place to build the habits that you want them to develop. And even though you're rewarding, but you really want to focus on the habits. Getting those good habits in.
That's a great point. Thank you. I appreciate it. It was great to have you on, and I enjoyed you sharing your journey with everybody else.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I love talking about money.
I know, I can tell.
Hey friends, just a reminder that I do need your help. If you listen on Apple Podcast, would you leave me a rating and a comment? If you listen on Spotify, don't forget to follow and leave a rating. If you listen on Amazon Music or Audible, writing a review would be extremely helpful. And don't forget to share. Let someone else know about this awesome podcast. And lastly, if you want to support financially, you can buy me a coffee at $5 per cup. The link is in the show notes. I can't wait to share the next episode with you. Until then, see you later.